D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Adam Vingan, David Janes, Nick Frazier here with you today. Willie Donick and Derek Mason out today. So, the off-season portion of the Titan season is over. We've got, what, a month or so before training camp starts? A month
July
and a couple.
July 22nd,
I believe, right? Yeah, either 22nd or 23rd. So roughly a month until the Titans reconvene for training camp and the season truly begins. And a lot of attention, of course, is going to be on Cam Ward as the number one overall pick and the presumed starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. But, of course, as well, there is going to be a lot of attention on Brian Callahan. And in the Tennessee in a couple of days ago, Gentry Estes, friend of the station, wrote a column with the headline, Brian Callahan is trying to beat the odds and keep his job with the Tennessee Titans. And Gentry wrote in part, quote, asked how lessons from last season have affected how he goes about his job, Callahan cited, quote, a different urgency, end quote, and in, quote, how I deal with the staff in particular, end quote. Callahan, however, opted against sweeping changes to his staff. Offensive and defensive coordinators were each retained. Ultimately, Callahan did little other than upgrade the special teams coach by going from an overmatched Colt Anderson to the highly respected John Fossil. The humility to learn and adjust can be powerful for a football coach. Most have egos preventing that. But Callahan has demonstrated that he's not too proud. He's also shown loyalty to his coaches. These are positive qualities for a human being, but no one doubts Callahan as a quality person. We still have no choice, however, but to doubt him as an NFL head coach. If he wins a few more games in 2025 and gets the Titans closer to respectability, it'll be one of the more impressive coaching feats in the league. And even that still might not be enough to appease ownership. So good luck, Brian Callahan. Seems like you're going to need it. Gentry Estes in the Tennessean earlier this week. And Frazier, you reminded me that Jared yesterday gave his quote-unquote Vegas odds, his lost Jared odds, I believe he calls it, on Callahan surviving past this season. And he put the odds in favor of him losing his job. I'm curious for your opinion on Brian Callahan as a coach. I know that you and Chase and Big Joe have talked about this just like we have on this program, just like Robbie and Retro, just like Jared. I would love your opinion on your thoughts on Brian Callahan as a head coach. Was there anything you saw from him last season that you liked, and what must he show you this season to prove that he has what it takes to be a successful NFL coach?
I think he has to be more assertive as a head coach. I think there was a lot of things that kind of were a little more laxed, like the whole Jeffrey Simmons thing last season when he went off at a local media member here in the market. I think that should have really set the standard, and he didn't pounce on that opportunity. Other things is in, you know, when Will Levis would do his little weird antics and, you know, you kept alternating quarterbacks week in and week out. Is it Will Levis? Is it Mason Rudolph? Once you make the decision to move off of Will Levis to go to Mason Rudolph, the chemistry is gone. The chemistry in the locker room, to me, I mean, I'm not in the locker room, but from a guy that's played football, like it definitely puts a wrench into things mentally for other players on that team. So I think that's another knock on Brian Callahan. And I think one more recently that I was not a fan of is this whole point system thing. I know it's very elementary for the most part, but I've been a part of a system that's used that, and it didn't bode well for us at all. And I don't want to keep using my personal experiences, but when you do something like that and there's no end goal for that, and your players don't know what you're getting out of it, but yet you tell media that it was good morale for this team, we're building chemistry, we're building a better foundation that way, it's going to have to be shown on the field during training camp immediately. Like, I mean, and that comes with joint practices. I think that's your primary thing you got to really see is has Brian Callahan made benefit to this team this offseason, and that'd be in joint practices. So that's my knocks on Brian Callahan right now. I think he's a knowledgeable coach. I think he knows what you know, needs to happen, and that's win football games. But I've said it before on these airwaves, especially on the weekends, if the Titans go 1-4 or something like that, I think it's a short leash for Brian Callahan, and he might be out the door.
So I've referenced this on the show before, but I do find it fascinating that five of the past seven quarterbacks drafted number one overall have had their coaches fired in season in their rookie years. Caleb Williams last season with Matt Eberflus, Bryce Young with Frank Reich, Trevor Lawrence with Urban Meyer. Now, Urban Meyer was just a disaster from the start.
That was a different situation. Right. Yeah.
Baker Mayfield with Hugh Jackson, and Jared Goff with friend of the station, Jeff Fisher. So five of the past seven quarterbacks drafted number one overall have had their coaches fired in season in their rookie years. And not every situation is the same, but there is a trend there. And it always leads to conversations about how a coach should be evaluated when it comes to developing a young quarterback. And I remember late last season, Willie, Derek, and I were talking about this. About if I'm Brian Callahan, this is me speaking. If I'm Brian Callahan, if my choices were acquiring a veteran free agent quarterback, such as Sam Darnold, or and that probably leading to more wins. Like if Sam Darnold was the Titans quarterback, you're probably going to win more games than you would than you're going to with Cam Ward this season. So if my choices were I'm Brian Callahan. If my choices were the Titans sign a veteran quarterback who can help me win games and boost my record, or the Titans draft a quarterback number one overall and I have another opportunity to develop a young quarterback, I'm choosing the latter. Because when the Titans hired Callahan, they talked him up about all of the quarterbacks he had worked with in the past, veteran quarterbacks. They were confident that he could develop Will Levis. That did not happen. I think that's more of a reflection of Will Levis than it is of Brian Callahan. But because they are connected, Will Levis's failure is seen as Brian Callahan's failure. So for me, if I'm Brian Callahan, I wanted an opportunity with another young quarterback to show you, hey, without saying it, Will Levis was beyond fixable. I've got a quarterback here in Cam Ward who I can truly develop, and I want to show you that I am a quarterback developer. So he's going to have that opportunity. So I think it would be unwise for Titans fans to grade Brian Callahan on wins and losses. Let's say the Titans go 5-12 this season. First of all, that would be an improvement. But let's say they go 5-12. But Cam Ward looks like the real deal. To me, that should be more important than the Titans winning five games. The question is, Frazier, will Callahan's bosses see that the same way?
I don't think so. And the reason why is because we've been hearing all this talk about Cam Ward's getting there before the coaches at 5 a.m. Well, who does that really reflect? Does that reflect Cam Ward or Brian Callahan? You tell me.
Well, I don't know what time the other coaches are getting there.
That's what I'm saying. If Cam Ward's getting there before all the other coaches, and it's supposedly Brian Callahan's the quarterback guru, who does that reflect, Cam Ward or Brian Callahan?
Yeah, I see what you're trying to say. I'm not sure I agree. I don't think Cam Ward coming in early and coaches saying he's in before some of the coaches means that Brian Callahan isn't working hard.
Oh, I'm just saying in general, normally when a player is putting in extra effort outside of football and outside of other coaches helping him, it then comes to the standard of, well, the front office is looking at that. Well, maybe if the – I don't know if Brian Callahan's still doing his 3 p.m. phone calls every Monday with Amy Adams Strunk.
Yeah, I don't know.
But if that comes up in a conversation and, you know, they talk about it and so forth, I just think that I go back to my initial comment about Brian Callahan with his assertiveness. I don't know if this assertiveness he is lacking is really coming off as the head coach that the Titans need. You get what I'm saying? Like, I think if you have Cam Ward as your quarterback and he's showing that he's more of a – leader and taking the initiative to grow as a player, and Brian Callahan's just kind of there tagging along, that's where I have the issue.
Well, you just look at the juxtaposition of Brian Callahan and his predecessor. Mike Vrabel played the game at a high level, won multiple championships. Let's just be honest. Mike Vrabel, total meathead. Brian Callahan, not a meathead. My friend J.R. Lind, who used to live here, used to write for the Nashville Scene, among other places. He described Mike Vrabel in this way, and it has stuck with me for years. He described Mike Vrabel as a human tribal tattoo, and that is what Mike Vrabel is. That is Mike Vrabel's personality. That is not Brian Callahan. And I think the juxtaposition, I think, you know, every year they have those like NFL coaches symposiums and they have all of the coaches take a picture together. And I think, if I recall correctly, Vrabel was standing behind Callahan because the front row was sitting and the back row was standing and just like looking at Callahan, unassuming, versus Vrabel, you know, this larger than life personality, you know, big, broad guy. I think people compare Callahan's personality to Vrabel's personality, and that is sort of used as a cudgel against Callahan because he's not the big, brash Mike Vrabel. I think that works against him. I'm not sure how entirely fair it is. But I do think that Callahan should be judged on the development of Cam Ward. Let's go to Daryl from Hendersonville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. One thing that sticks in my craw when I hear this continuously about coaches who have worked with great quarterbacks, and that infers that there must be a connection between that coach and the greatness of that player, is, I think, totally off base. You know, you can extend that to coaching trees as well. How well did the Belichick coaching tree work out?
Not very well.
We all know the answer to that. Moreover,
good.
How did Belichick do after Brady left? We all know the answer to that. So the fact that Callahan worked, you know, that he touched the garment, or that somehow he got some good mojo when he was working with Peyton Manning and working with Joe Burrow, is no indication or a predictor at all. There's, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't done any studies on this. There is no correlation between the success of a coach and the players that he worked with. Did he develop a player? Who knows? I mean, he might know, the player might know. But outside of that, I don't think there's any indication that just because Callahan worked with any other great players, great quarterbacks, is going to say, well, you know, that's going to rub off on Ward. No correlation there at all. So he will be a success. I hope he is. But just because he worked with these other players doesn't mean squat to me.
Thank you for the call. And I've actually pulled up the Titans news release from when they hired Brian Callahan. Quote, in Cincinnati, he was an instrumental part of quarterback Joe Burrow's development. Callahan began his NFL career as a coaching assistant for the Broncos in 2010 before being promoted to offensive quality control coach in 2011 and then offensive assistant in 2013. During his time with the Broncos, Callahan worked with quarterback Peyton Manning during a time when the Broncos won the Super Bowl and Manning was named NFL MVP. Callahan was quarterback's coach for the Lions in 2016-2017 when he helped Matthew Stafford develop as one of the league's most productive quarterbacks. While working with Stafford, Callahan helped the veteran finish third in passing yards and fourth in passing touchdowns in 2017 while posting a then-career-best 99.3 passer rating. Callahan joined the Raiders in 2018 when he helped quarterback Derek Carr achieve a then-career-high in passing yards while leading the AFC with a 68.9% completion percentage. So the Titans, when hiring Brian Callahan, and I mentioned this to Willie and Derek in the past, that, to the caller's point, he worked around these quarterbacks. No one is saying that Brian Callahan had a significant impact on Peyton Manning when Peyton Manning was with the Broncos. Peyton Manning was Peyton Manning when he was with the Broncos. But the hope from the Titans' perspective was working with these great quarterbacks would help him learn the lessons necessary to develop a quarterback on his own. I've also heard this too, Frazier. In the lead up to the draft and right after the draft, a lot of stories were written about Cam Ward and the Titans. And Brian Callahan would consistently in these stories and interviews reference his time working with Joe Burrow, because Callahan did work intricately, intimately with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. And people would say, well, Joe Burrow's Joe Burrow. I mean, I get that, but Callahan, more than any of the other quarterbacks I just listed, actually did play a hand in Joe Burrow's development. Yes, I know Joe Burrow is a stud, right? But I don't think you can diminish the role that Brian Callahan played in that development. Also, that's Callahan's reference point when dealing with a quarterback drafted number one overall, Joe Burrow. So he leans on that experience. I've got no problem with that. I do think that the Titans in building up Callahan when they hired him was he worked with all of these great quarterbacks. So he's going to rub off on Will Levis, which did not happen. But you hope it does happen with Cam Ward.
Yeah, I mean, it was a sales pitch to get him the job. But, I mean, you mentioned Peyton Manning and you mentioned Joe Burrow, especially Joe Burrow being the close ties he has with him when he was in Cincinnati. It reminds me of just he's there as an aide, and I think Callahan's a really good play caller, I'd say, instead of being a true head coach when you're overseeing everything. I think coaches like this that try to make the transition from being a quality control assistant to an offensive coordinator to a head coach, there's a bit of a transition period, and I think that's what you see in the first year with Callahan, but yet it comes back to the assertiveness. If you're not assertive, making the transition from an OC to a head coach, you lose, I wouldn't say the respect, but you lose a little bit of a grit factor. And I think Cam Ward brings that grit factor, and hopefully that instills it back into Callahan, if that makes sense.
I firmly believe that Will Levis was beyond
fixable.
I think that Brian Callahan did the best he could, and Levis, I mean, I've likened Levis to my toddler, because I think it was the game, I think it was week one against the Bears,
Chicago.
After he made those terrible mistakes, the first of many terrible mistakes. And Callahan said either after the game or maybe that following week, I told Levis he didn't need to be a hero. Just keep it simple. Let's get out of here with a win. And it reminded me of sometimes when I have a disagreement with my little one. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, Arlo, don't do that. And he looks at me and goes, I'm going to do it. Like, I sometimes compare my toddler to Will Levis. but that's sort of what I felt like with Levis, that you could try to hammer home with him these certain concepts, and I just don't think he was able to grasp all of them. I'm more confident that Cam Ward will be able to do that. Now, does that mean that I think that Cam Ward is going to be the Titans franchise quarterback for the next decade? I don't know the answer to that. But I'm more confident in what I know of Cam Ward's makeup than I am of Will Levis's makeup, that he will take the coaching and won't make the boneheaded mistakes that it's not Brian Callahan's fault, in my opinion, that Will Levis did all of the stupid things he did last year. Brian Callahan wasn't coaching Will Levis to do those things. Levis was doing those things because he couldn't handle the pressure.
Yeah, but as a coach, that's your responsibility to help stop that.
I know that.
I mean, that's week in and week out at practice. Like,
That's fair.
Yeah. Like, you can't go and say, oh, well, I mean, you can go and say, but I'm just saying in general, like, if you're Will Levis, you can't go out there week in and week out and just throw up just random stuff. That's what it falls on Brian Callahan's shoulders for. You can't go to practice and say, Will, we can't throw four interceptions in 1 week. We can't do that at all. And then you go into the next week of practice and you throw two interceptions. And after practice, you're like, you know what, Will, you only threw two interceptions. Make sure you don't throw four this weekend. Why does he do? He throws four. You can't do that. As a coach, you have to stay accountable. This acronym I use, ACT, accountability, consistency, and trust. I mean, Callahan is not doing any of that when it comes to Will Levis. And so to look at Will Levis I look at him as a sales pitch for Brian Callahan to get that job last year. And now that he's in the job, you have to apply what you know and actually put it on the field. And to me, I think it's just he's a really good play caller. That's it. I think that's the ceiling. We talked about the Preds earlier with this veteran group. We know what the ceiling is with these veteran guys. You got to add other compliments to their roster to where they can be better. For the Titans, Brian Callahan's a really good play caller, and we've seen that in years past. I think now you have to complement that with, you know, good quarterback play, and hopefully, like you're saying, Cam Ward is that guy of the future.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Your thoughts on Brian Callahan. How warm should his seat be right now? Should it just be, you know, a little lukewarm, room temperature?
I think when you're in the car, you have the high-low feature. Put him on the low.
Okay.
Yeah.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on that. Nick Frazier, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Adam Vingan, Nick Frazier here with you today. Willie Donick, Derek Mason out. Let's go to Ben on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, talking Brian Callahan. Ben, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I think you should be completely on the hot seat. You know, and as far as I like to think of head coaches in a more simplistic fashion, you know, I think that a good NFL head coach should be kind of like a gang leader, if you will. You know, he's got to be able to develop these guys into playing a smash mouth tough game. And what you got in Callahan is a chess player, and he might be a really good chess player, but the last time I checked, I wasn't scared of anybody who plays chess. You know, you need to have somebody who can develop these guys into being a feared, rough team. And that's why he doesn't get any respect from these guys. That's why Vrabel did. You know, especially when you compare him to Vrabel, like what you guys were talking about. You know, Vrabel is an intimidating person. You know, and there were reports that even Amy was intimidated by Vrabel because of who he was. And that's the kind of leader you want on your football team. You know, you go around the league, you look at any of these head coaches. You know, they might not be scary and intimidating like Vrabel, but you look.
Did we lose Ben? We may have lost Ben. But I think the point was there.
Yeah, and that's actually what I was talking about with you in between the breaks.
You
was
were.
That I come from a football mentality of put your hand in the ground when the whistle blows. All 11 guys are going at each other until that whistle blows again, until the play stops. That is the grit that's missing with this football team. Everything is all position specialized. All quarterbacks here, running backs here, wide receivers here. I get that. You got to hone in on the craft. But at the same time, when you start specializing certain things, you lose the essence of a baseline culture. And to the caller's point with Ben, he mentioned Vrabel. Vrabel kind of had that with everybody. He built that foundation of some form of culture. And it's that grit, it's that football mentality that I think is lacking with this team. It's just the lack of winning with this team has caused them to go into this mediocre state. And it just, I think the value of players when they want to play good, they tend to not, because there's nothing to really play for when you're on a mediocre team. You're really just playing for the value of yourself and going on elsewhere, maybe getting traded or finishing out your contract and going somewhere else. That's the mindset to me when you look at a team like the Titans. They do so well in their last season of their contract. Titans tend to, we're not going to re-sign. You go somewhere else. They go somewhere else, and they end up flourishing. I think that's the lay of the land. That's the way the NFL works. When you're in a market like Nashville where it's a small market but yet growing, it's just – you end up being mediocre. It's just simply it.
John in Nashville says, say the Titans go 1-4 starting out and Callahan is out. Then who do you think will take over in the interim? I assume it would be
Bones
John Fossil.
Yeah.
Since when Jeff Fisher was fired by the LA Rams, John Fossil took over for him. So John Fossil has experience as an interim coach. But it all comes down to Cam Ward.
Yeah.
If Cam Ward shows promise and the Titans struggle from a win-loss standpoint, I think that Brian Callahan will continue to be his coach. If they develop a good relationship, even if it doesn't translate to wins, because let's be honest, the Titans are still among the league's worst teams in terms of talent.
Okay.
I mean, would you disagree with that?
It's fair. It's a fair comment.
I think, you know, Pro Football Focus went through this exercise recently where they ranked the top 32 players at every major position in the NFL. And I think there were a total of 6 Titans players across all of those lists. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Jeffrey Simmons, Devondre Sweat, Kevin Zeitler, Peter Skoronski, maybe J.C. Latham. Like, I don't think Calvin Ridley was on that list. I think Tony Pollard may have been on that list. You know, like, there isn't a lot of talent on this team.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there is a limit to how much chicken salad Brian Callahan can make out of the chicken bleep mm-hmm. that is on this roster. But if Cam Ward again shows promise, I do think that that should work in Callahan's favor. So even if the Titans go 5-12, If Cam Ward looks like the real deal, I think that should be enough, like in my opinion,
right.
Should be enough to save Callahan's job for at least another year, because you do not want to throw another coach in there. And because that's another thing you hear a lot about is, You don't want you don't want all of this upheaval in the coaching room and the on the coaching staff for a young quarterback. Mm-hmm. I do think there's something to that.
Well, let me just rewind the clock a little bit.
Sure.
The texter mentioned 1-4 if Callahan's in or out. How about this? I'll pose it to you, Adam. You mentioned, you know, if Callahan and Ward have a really good rapport throughout the season, say he's not fired after a 1-4 start. But say this instance he is. If the Titans end up losing 4 of those games by 3-point margin, or I guess 3 or more scores, would you say he's canned? In my opinion, I'd say yes.
So they go 1-4, and all 4 losses, they're blown out.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
By 3 margins, yep.
I mean, in that scenario, it would be hard.
But yet, Callahan and Cam Ward got a great rapport. That's what you're talking about. They got a great rapport, man.
I'm looking at their schedule at the start. So you said 5 weeks. So yep. They're at Denver, home to the Rams, home to the Colts, at the Texans, at the Cardinals. That doesn't seem like a schedule where they're going to be blown out.
But say times. That happens. Say that happens. They get blown out by 3 scores, man.
Again,
And yet they got a really good relationship.
I hear what you're saying.
They got Sunday dinner together every game, after every game.
I hear what you're saying. I still think that if those losses are more on the defense than they are in Cam Ward, I would be okay with that.
Now, wait a minute. Is Brian Callahan the head coach or offensive coordinator in this situation? If he's the head coach, he's gone, buddy. I'm telling you, gone.
History suggests that you are absolutely right. I would just be wary of moving on from Callahan if Cam Ward is showing signs of progress. But let's go to T-Mac. I assume not Tracy McGrady. T-Mac from the Borough on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. T-Mac, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that Brian Callahan is on the hot seat. And the reason why I say this is because, you know, the quarterback and the head coach are always going to be paired together, whether that's Brady and Belichick, whether that's, the head coach with Cincinnati and Joe Burrow.
Dak Taylor.
Will Levis put Callahan in a horrible position right at the gate. I mean, just playing doofus football and just doing dumb stuff. Like, if you go back and look at those games, if you eliminate a lot of those Will Levis mistakes, they win about 4 or 5 more games alone. So I really don't even think it's really Callahan. It was all bad quarterback play. And like I said, the quarterback put the head coach and the team in a bad position. So you really got to look at that. I do think that, and then, of course, Mason Rudolph wasn't any good either. But I do think that they win a few more games with better quarterback play and, you know, from Cam Ward. And I really don't think that the head coach should be in trouble at all. And I hang up and listen.
But T-Mac, before you hang up.
Oh, he's gone.
He hung up.
Sorry.
The thing is, if you're going to say Will Levis is the issue to all that, well, who's responsible for making him better?
You're right that the –
That's Brian Callahan. That's the head coach, the guy that has final say on player development.
You're not wrong about that. And Brian Callahan – that Will Levis's struggles are a reflection of Brian Callahan's coaching. I guess it depends on how much of a reflection you think it is. Like, do you think that Will Levis's struggles are all on Brian Callahan? Do you think it's a little on Brian Callahan?
I'd say majority. The reason being is because the way the Titans hyped up Brian Callahan when he came into Tennessee. They said he had this giant quarterback resume of working with the best of the best.
Right.
And you can't make Will Levis a decent quarterback in the NFL, not even serviceable, on one of the worst team in the NFL? You mean to tell me that Brian Callahan can't turn Will Levis into a decent quarterback to where they can win more than 3 games?
One texter says, I just wonder if replacing Brian Callahan midseason would also mean replacing Bill Callahan, and if that will play into the decision. Only time will tell, and we may never know.
Yeah, I mean – there's a difference. The reason is we look at Dan Moore Jr. We don't know what he is with the Titans yet. I think Bill Callahan, when it comes to switching J.C. Latham from the left side to the right side, that's a little bit different. There's a lot of transition for that. I'll give Bill Callahan a little bit more grace, I mean, you could put some fault onto him for that because of Will Levis's decision makings for the lack of left tackle production and just offensive line production in general. But there's promise. There's been some promise with a lot of guys on the O-line for Tennessee, and I think you got to give him a little more grace. But as for Brian Callahan, I don't think you can give him that same amount of grace.
Let's go to Ron in Hendersonville on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Ron, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you guys doing? To me, it really makes no sense getting rid of Bill Callahan. I mean, give the guy a chance here. I mean, I think the NFL is just a hole. It's too quick to fire and get rid of people, you know. And I think that it would be a disservice to Cam Ward, to get rid of him and then bring in another coach. To me, it just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Give him at least another year, no matter what they do this first year. Give him at least that much. And that's all I have to say on that one.
Appreciate the call, Ron. I think for me, when it comes to looking at a quarterback like Cam Ward, you want to do as much as you can successfully under that rookie contract. That's why I'd say live in this microwave society of the NFL when you can coaches in the span of less than a season. I think that's what you got to really look at. That a lot of franchises, organizations, they prioritize those rookie deals. And so going forward with that, I think you got to keep Brian Callahan on a short leash. You do.
Yeah, I think barring what you were trying to describe earlier, Frazier, about they start with losses in four or five games and they all look like the Bills game and the Lions game from last year. Barring that, I think Callahan makes it through the season. I really do. Because quite frankly, I don't think anybody is expecting much from this Titans team this season. So if they go 3-14 again or 4-13 or 5-12, like I think those are what the expectations are. I would like to see a full body of work of Cam Ward with Brian Callahan as his coach, and barring just a complete unraveling of the entire system on both sides of the ball, I think he should be given at least that. Now, if Cam Ward is stuck in neutral for most of the season and they lose a lot of games, I think it's fair game for Callahan at the end of next season. But I think I want to see Brian Callahan personally. I want to see Brian Callahan with an opportunity to mold another young quarterback. One texter says, you have to remember Will was an older player coming out of college. Older players tend to have habits that are harder to overcome. So is Callahan really capable of corralling Levis? That was sort of my point earlier. But I would like to see Callahan have the opportunity with Cam Ward for a full season to see if Cam Ward can be that guy. And if Cam Ward shows promise, I think that reflects well on Brian Callahan. But if he's stuck in neutral, he looks like he's not ready, the team kind of falls apart. Absolutely. I think it would be best for the Titans if Callahan gets at least the full year to show that he can do it. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. 615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on this. We will also wrap up the week by taking it to the bank. That's coming up next. Nick Frazier, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Adam Vingan, David James, Nick Frazier here with you. It's time to wrap up the week by taking it to the bank, courtesy of our friends at F&M Bank. Business is complicated. Banking doesn't have to be at F&M Bank. So I thought, of course, in my opinion, the last true sporting event left for a few months. No offense, Frazier. Game 7 of the NBA Finals on Sunday, 7 o'clock. Pacers at Thunder. 6.5-point favorites, the Thunder are, in this game. So I just thought it'd be simple. Let's go around the room. Frazier, you begin. Take it to the bank. Pacers or Thunder? Game 7 NBA Finals on Sunday.
I'm going Thunder, but Pacers cover.
Thunder, but Pacers cover. Okay.
Can I double dip on that? Is that cool?
Why not?
Yeah.
That's totally fun.
This is sort of the off-season portion. Yeah. We pick it back up. We start counting points again once football season starts.
Oh, so this is like preseason for us here.
Right.
Okay. Exactly.
We're just having fun with this one. So Frazier says the Thunder will win, but the Pacers will cover. I'm gonna pick the upset here. Give me the Pacers on the road. Probably not going to happen, but I'm going to say it anyway. Give me the Pacers. I think Tyrese Halliburton has one more clutch shot in him in this postseason. So give me the Pacers to topple the Thunder in an upset to win the NBA title. David James, what about you?
I'm the same boat with you, Adam. Just the Spurs, man. It's the last time Rick Carlisle was in the NBA Finals, it was with the Mavericks, and the Mavericks won.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. So I'll be curious to see, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, Frazier, you know, the ratings for this NBA Finals have not been great.
Right.
And people who don't like the current direction of the NBA have been using that as proof that the current direction of the NBA is bad. But when it's game seven, especially when a championship is at stake, people who criticize the sport will probably end up watching even a little bit. So I will be tuned in on Sunday. Again, I haven't watched a full game of these NBA Finals. I've been tracking them. I've been watching pieces of games here and there. But I will make a point to be watching this game at tip-off. Now, if it turns into a bit of a blowout, I may turn my attention elsewhere for a little bit. But I will be watching from the start. I am fascinated by this series. It's been, you know, intriguing basketball, really good players. So I will be tuning in. I did actually find this interesting. You are a noted baseball fan.
Yes.
Sammy Sosa returned to Wrigley Field for the first time in more than 20 years today before Chicago's game against the Mariners. He's set to be inducted into the Cubs Team Hall of Fame this year. As a Cardinals fan, I'm curious for how you feel about Sammy Sosa.
As a Cardinals fan, I don't like him because he's a Cubs guy. But as for baseball as a sport as a whole,
oh, nothing was better.
Yeah.
Nothing was better.
That home run race between him and McGuire, oh. I think that's what really resurged baseball. And you got to tip the hat to him, because without that, baseball, I'm not saying it dies, but it definitely falls out of the public eye of what it really is today.
Yeah, and Sammy Sosa has had an interesting, you know, I was going to say career, but his life has taken some twists and turns.
Yes, it has.
Didn't he like bleach his skin at one point something like that?
Yeah.
Bleached his skin. I don't know why. I don't know if there was some sort of medical background to that. I don't know. But you know what? He has a smile on his face. He was at Wrigley Field. You know what? Let the guy live, you know?
No, I remember they would cut in, like on, they would cut in to any broadcast when Mark McGuire or Sammy Sosa was up to bat during that home run chase.
Mm-hmm.
And even for someone who, again, does not classify himself as a huge baseball fan, it was awesome to watch. And, you know, so, by the way, the Cubs up 3-1 on the Mariners in the bottom of the second. So perhaps Sammy Sosa.
The Sammy effect.
So, Frazier, as we've discussed, you have an eclectic taste in many things, including sports.
Yes.
So, for a lot of sports fans, Sunday will represent the end of the sports season if you're not a huge baseball fan. But what are you watching? What do you like to watch in this space of time between the end of the NBA season, but before football season? I know you have a lot of sports you like to watch.
Yeah, soccer is obviously a big summer sport in North America. A lot of European clubs are done right about now, but they're doing the FIFA Club World Cup, which two of those games I believe will be played next week here in Nashville on Tuesday and Thursday. I love professional darts. Luke Littler, world number two, I believe, and Luke Humphreys, who is world number one. Michael Van Gerwen, number three, whatever. Not going to bore people with that. I love NRL, Australian Rugby, National Rugby League. When I was working overnight shifts here, that was the one thing on that kept me up. And my brother got me attached to it, so I, you know, grew an affiliation for a team, the Brisbane Broncos. And they're one of those top eight teams right now that are kind of fighting for a playoff spot. But overall, I just like the product. It reminds me a lot of the NFL. During COVID, that was kind of one of the sports that just, you know, wasn't shut down. And the TV product, just the way things were presented, it just reminded me a lot of the NFL and, like, player personalities as well, like a Tom Brady of that league or whatever. It's just great. I loved every bit of it. Just, you know, soccer in general has just been a big gravitating thing for me during the summer. So, yeah, for my take of the bank, though, I'll go with baseball. I say Rafael Devers hits a home run tonight against the Boston Red Sox. It's a reunion tour already. So, yeah, it's the Giants versus the Red Sox. I say Devers goes yard.
We did get a question during Ask Us Anything that we did not get to. Somebody asked you specifically about Nashville SC.
Yeah.
And how you're feeling about the club. So why don't we give Nashville SC a little love here at the end of the program.
I think Nashville is definitely ahead of schedule. Nobody really expected BJ Callahan to have this much success this quick. I think Nashville, they have their – I think they've developed and grown as a team as the season's gone on, especially when it comes to specific lineups. When you go up against teams, I guess, in the top, I'd say, five in the Eastern Conference or whatever, or bottom five, they have an A side and a B side, and that normally kind of – dictates who's in the midfield, and that's normally Patrick Yazbek and Eddie Taxeth as their A group. Then they kind of alternate. Eddie Taxeth has been the constant in the midfield for them. Taxeth is normally paired with like a Gaston Brugman or I'm trying to think who else. Matt Corcoran, the young player. Wyatt Meyer, he's a utility guy. But the way BJ Callahan plays, it's just impressive. A lot of high press, a lot of quick transition counterattack stuff, and yeah, they're really good. They're top three, I believe, in the Eastern Conference right now. So, again, ahead of schedule, they play this weekend, which is going to be a fun one to watch. They're away all their games this month. They only have three matches. They already had one last weekend against Chicago, and then now this weekend and the following. So,
Matthew in Nashville wants us to react to the big bombshell from Ross Dillinger on Yahoo Sports that Wisconsin has filed suit against Miami. In a landmark moment, Ross Dillinger writes, in a landmark moment in college athletics, one university has filed suit against another for the poaching of a college football player under contract. The University of Wisconsin and its NIL collective filed a complaint in state circuit court on Friday against the University of Miami over alleged tortious interference, according to documents obtained by Yahoo Sports. In a first-of-its-kind and perhaps precedent-setting move, Wisconsin is seeking unspecified financial damages and a declaratory judgment deeming UM's action as wrongful for interfering with a binding revenue share contract between Wisconsin and Xavier Lucas, a former defensive back who left the program in January to compete at Miami. It was a groundbreaking decision in which Lucas transferred without entering the portal. It had already closed. And after signing the contract with the Badgers, the lawsuit details what transpired in the winter among the three parties, Wisconsin, Miami, and Lucas. Wisconsin claims that Miami communicated with Lucas, knowingly inducing him, despite knowing he had entered a contract with the school, something it terms as intentional interference that, quote, was not justified or privileged and caused Lucas to breach his contract. What do you think about all of that?
I think it's just adding to all the pie when it comes to the Wild Wild West of NIL. I think this is it's bad for college football because – money's going to get real finicky with this whole salary cap thing coming into it all. I think NIL is a scapegoat from all that. And so for this to be in a bit of asking for money from another, you know, university, I think this is a big issue because then this only will domino effect to other schools. Like, you're going to see more of these allegations happen because if there's a team or, a college in some case or an athlete that's asking for more money or has some sort of, I guess, what's the best way to put it? Some sort of tampering issue when it comes to all this. That's what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot more tampering with NIL.
And I completely understand why that's going to happen. I mean,
yeah,
it's a bit of a mess.
I think it's only going to get messier. That's the issue. Like, when you bring in a salary cap that's not really regulated for the most part. I get you have a lot of the amount of money and you can partition it certain ways within your university, but then you have the NIL and you add all that to it. Yeah, it gets very murky. The waters are murky, murky, man.
And I agree with NIL. I mean, I do think that players should be compensated, but yeah, it opens this Pandora's box of all of these issues, including one university suing another, as Ross Dillinger of Yahoo reports, Wisconsin suing the University of Miami over what they allege is a breach of contract with a player that they thought they had in their mix. But Frazier,
they should just give him some cheese.
They do have plenty of that in Wisconsin. Frazier, this was the first time you and I have hosted the show together.
Yeah.
I get to check you off of my bingo card. I've worked with a lot of different people on the station. This was the first time we hosted the show together. I had a wonderful time, my friend.
It was fun.
Yes.
Good way to end a good Friday, huh?
Yes, absolutely. So that'll do it for us this week. Willie and Derek back next week. Jared out today. In addition to Force Company sans Nick Frazier, it'll be Connor Newt and Jake Lyman coming up next. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for spending your Friday late morning and early afternoon with Frazier and myself. And on behalf of Derek Mason, be loved, love on your people, have a wonderful weekend. Peace.